podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Well, well, we're approaching the business end of this World Cup, and via a combination of some unspeakable Englishness and Pakistan doing what Pakistan does, this tournament has been smashed right open like a can of tuna thrown by the paperboy. I'm Phil Walker, and this is the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast in partnership with Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. I'll be joined in just a moment by Andrew Alderson, but just today we have to commemorate Baba Azam Day. His first World Cup century, the second youngest Pakistani after Salim Malik to make one in the Big Show, and now the second fastest to 3,000 runs in ODIs, with only Hashim Amla quicker in history. He was with us today just three overs in, those owlish features alive to possibility, his bat seemingly massive in those reassuringly unpumped arms of his. It was tough at the start, and he draped his bat over a few early as if throwing a blanket over a fairground fire, and then came the shots. One particular over from Trent Bolt featured a couple of high-handed cover drives from our man and two unplayable jaffers from the left armour. I tell you what, it should be added to the state school syllabus. The economy of movement and minimal pre-shot shuffle, the horizontal backlift, bits of Sachin in there, or a little bit of callus, a quiet nod to the old world, really, to a time when batsmen didn't have to wrap it round the backs of their heads and swing from the neck. That pre-shot trigger brings the front foot pointing down the pitch. It's opening up the shoulders and the V, opening up the whole arena. So when a bowler errs, it's those hands detached from one another on the bat handle, just like Meandad, modelled on Meandad, and then they take over and get to make their beautiful shape. We said after India, he had 150 in four hits. I wrote at the time that if Pakistan were going to do anything in this World Cup, it had to be Baba Azam to inspire it. Well, here we are, an unbeaten century, a kneel to the almighty, and suddenly Pakistan a joint fifth, a point behind England, and they have Afghanistan and Bangladesh to play. With me to unpick Baba's celestial genius, let's say, and other less important things is, of course, Andrew Alderson of the New Zealand Herald. Andrew, sorry about that eulogy, totally over the top, but I couldn't resist it. What was your moment of the day, sir?
Gee, I feel like I should say something about Baba Azam after that, Phil. But I'll tell you what, my moment of the day differs slightly. I suppose I'm coming from a New Zealand perspective here, but I just think it was the delivery from Shadab Khan, who was able to dismiss Kane Williamson to see a lovely classical leg break and snaffled behind the stumps by Safar Azam, and that really was a pivotal moment. 83 for 5. New Zealand were able to recover somewhat, but Williamson's ability in this tournament to guide them through has been so pivotal that I feel that that was really just a key moment where he was, the New Zealand momentum shifted, and or Pakistan's at least did as well, mm-hmm. and they were in the ascendancy from there on in. Had been in the ascendancy from the start already. 46 for 4. Williamson and Neesham tried to re-establish things, then Williamson was dismissed. Mm-hmm. And as I say, there was that partnership between de Gronholm and Neesham, 132. I think it's the first sixth wicket partnership of a century or more by New Zealanders at a World Cup. It was Neesham's highest score at a World Cup, 97 not out. De Gronholm spent his longest time at the crease, as did Neesham, in a one-day international, but it still wasn't enough with, as you have already mentioned, Baba Azam playing such an outstanding role in getting to that century for Pakistan. And just what a scene here at Edgbaston too, Phil. Just the green kaleidoscope, if you like, of fans, and certainly an away game for New Zealand in many respects. And it was just a remarkable atmosphere to be part of, really. Just that, noise and cacophony, if you like, throughout the day, that really makes cricket a great sport to watch.
Yeah, it has been driven by the fans, this tournament so far. It's been as much a story of what's happening in the bleachers as it has what's been happening on the pitch. I just want to come back to Kane Williamson. Is there a fear that he's being asked to do a little bit too much, however Herculean and brilliant he obviously is?
I don't think you could ever ask Kane Williamson to do too much. I think that he's of that serene temperament that allows him to just block everything out and be able to concentrate. There's been very few blips in his career. Yes, he has a loss of form momentarily every now and again for maybe two or three innings. Hopefully it's not the next two or three innings from a New Zealand fan perspective, but by and large, He's able to just blank things out, which I think, you know, most cricketers do struggle to do at times on the mental side of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he is capable of taking them well into this tournament, at least to the semi-finals. But that's really the key to this New Zealand team at the moment. From what we've seen today, he needs more support. And
yeah,
if he's out for 41, and I think 14 one-day international innings in England, that he hasn't been dismissed for less than 40. So that's telling you something about the sort of form and the fact that he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of English conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that he needs support from top order for starters in the form of the openers. Martin Guptill, we know what he can do in one-day internationals. Colin Munro, we know what he can do in 2020s. But they need to find some form if they are persevered with. Henry Nicholls on the periphery there could come into the side for the next match against Australia. You've also got, I suppose, the all-rounders have performed, but there's probably been just that... And yeah, at times the bowling has as well, but I just think Tom Latham as well, probably
yep,
needing some runs now. He's struggled in each of his outings so far. So you've got Tom Blundell, who's been in a bit of form, but it hasn't actually debuted in one-day internationals on the periphery. That would be a bold call, though, at this late stage of the tournament.
You mentioned Henry Nicholls, who hasn't, as far as I'm aware, played yet this tournament. But, you know, in Test cricket, he's a real outlier. You know, he's emerged, he's top five in the Test rankings. You mentioned Colin Munro, who I think has made three T20 hundreds, and yet he's not really turned up in this tournament. Now we're at the business end of this show, and New Zealand are all but qualified for those semi-finals. Do you expect to see a change up top?
I think you could change it for the next game onwards and stick with it for the duration.
Mm-hmm.
But if you didn't change it for the next game against Australia, I think you'd have to stick with what you've got. I mean, I know they're almost determined to persevere with that unchanged lineup, and they admit today that they made that false call about it. Tony, they should have played him on a turning pitch, and I know that's a 20-20 hindsight, but it did come from the coach himself, who says that almost from the first ball of the game,
mm-hmm,
that saw the spin come on, they realised that it was going to turn, and they'd made quite a crucial error. So that's one that you would do match by match with, you know, moving out a pace bowler, bringing in a spinner.
Yep.
But in terms of the batting and the wicketkeeper batsman role at that number five spot for New Zealand, they'd either have to make those calls for the next game, or I think they have to continue on, because otherwise it's too late in the tournament to expect someone to come in and be playing the sort of tempo that you want, even though, you know, they've been practicing in the nets throughout. It's a big ask. Injuries.
Yeah, sure. And they've played the same team throughout the tournament. Matt Henry looked like he might be slightly short of a gallop, I thought, this morning. Maybe it's time for the great Tim Southee to be recalled?
Yeah, that's the other option as well. I mean, Tim Southee has a terrific record in England. I mean, 16 one-day internationals. He's got 25 wickets at 28. I think reasonable economy rate too in the modern times. I think about 5.5. Mm-hmm. So he's and such an experienced player as well. And we all know from the last World Cup how influential he was on the New Zealand team getting through to the final. So certainly an option. And Matt Henry too. I mean, he had a terrific start to the tournament. But I think I wonder if his confidence has been slightly dinted after that over the bowled for Carlos Brathwaite that went for 25. Whose confidence wouldn't be dented by that sort of a brutal attack? I think that it's something that he'll have to overcome in these latter two games if he is selected. So Southee's fit. Nicholls had an injury at the start of the tournament. He's fit again now. So a fully fit squad. So really some crucial decisions to come.
I want to dwell on a couple of New Zealand's likely lads. I want to talk about Lachie Ferguson and Jimmy Neesham, instantly lovable cricketers. When we think of New Zealand in World Cup cricket, we think of certain kind of cult heroes. We think of Great Batch, we think of Deepak Patel, Chris Harris, Roger Tooze even, last time 20-odd years ago back here in England. Lachie Ferguson and Jimmy Neesham fit right into that category for me. You know, they are fabulous cricketers, they are very highly skilled cricketers, but they are instantly lovable characters as well. Talk me through these two blokes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Jimmy Neesham, you've probably seen on Twitter. I mean, he tends to write his mind, and he's his own man, and that's great. We need that in cricket. We need that refreshing personality, if you like. And he's someone who's struggled with the game and contemplated retiring 18 months ago. But look at him now. He's on top of the world in many respects. He's had a 5-wicket bag with the ball. He's had the 97 all out today, among another.
Which is a brilliant innings today.
That are really highlighted. Lachie Ferguson as well. I mean, he's someone who's really relatively new in the side, but has excelled almost immediately and really gives him a point of difference with that pace that he's able to provide. So I think that both of those players, Lockie's, he made a bit of a difference to start today too with a couple of rockets that he was able to deliver to keep them in the hunt, at least initially.
Yeah.
with wickets, but that wasn't enough to be able to sustain that performance. But yeah, they're both, I guess, add a bit of, well, spice or a bit of verve to the New Zealand team dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Are your boys legitimate winners of this, Andrew?
I believe they are still in contention. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say they're winners. I think there's, if I was to pick a favourite at the moment, I still think India, for my mind, the most balanced side in the tournament, at least on paper. But Australia looming, as they always tend to do, Phil, around about this time, especially after the turmoil that they've suffered over time. I think that they've done incredibly well to get back on an even keel. And I'd put a lot of that down to Aaron Finch, actually. I've got a lot of time for, I've observed him in press conferences over the years and stand-ups, and he strikes me as a really level-headed character, and he looks like he's made a terrific difference there for that Australian team after the, you know, I guess the tumult that they've been through over the last couple of years. And I think from there on in, New Zealand, in the reckoning, I mean, today probably highlighted a few deficiencies, but England also in the mix. And, you know, with Pakistan playing the way they are, on a day like today, you think anything's possible, and could move on as well into the reckoning when they play with such fire.
I want to come back to you in a moment, but we spoke earlier to John Stern, urbane man of cricketing letters, former editor of the Wisden Cricketer, about England's campaign so far and what the hell we're meant to do with this thing. Here's John now. So, yeah, I'm joined by John Stern, editor-at-large of Wisden Cricket Monthly and formerly editor of the Wisden Cricketer. It's the afternoon after the botched run chase before John Stern. Has a sense of fatalism crowded out whatever optimism you may have had a few weeks ago?
I suppose, in a word, yes. It's a very peculiar feeling, and one that I don't think we really saw coming at all, a sense of deflation and shock, and not really just about the Australia game. That was pretty bad, but Australia are a good side and they appear to be getting better, but you added into the other defeat by Pakistan. Again, you can, in isolation, say that's a blip, but the Sri Lanka one, I think, is the one that is really the key thing here and has fed into what we saw against Australia, which seemed to be a team devoid of all the belief that we thought they had, and obviously we had too.
Yeah, and it's all the more alarming for how far they appear to have fallen so quickly. I want to try and get to the bottom of why they've now failed three times in four to chase down targets that at one point they were favoured to haul in. Any theories? Any attempts to try and unpick this baffling situation?
Well, I'm not sure that. I suppose my hunch or the observation is that this is a team melting in the spotlight, really, which is very sad to see, and doesn't really. It's quite hard to rationalise, because it's not like they've just been beating poor teams over the past 4 years. I mean, they're not number one in the world for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
There is undoubtedly a fundamental difference between playing bilateral series and playing tournaments. Nasser Hussain interviewed Ricky Ponting yesterday during the game, or well, not during the game, he did it the day before, and there was a real glint in Ponting's eye about when Nasser asked him about the difference between bilateral and tournament play. And I mean, he didn't necessarily produce any great revelations, but you know, there is just a fundamental difference. You're playing, you know, different opponents each game for a start off.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it sounds obvious, but every game matters, although we thought in this tournament maybe not every game would matter, but actually now they matter a bit more than we anticipated. But there's maybe a slight sense with England, and again, this is all hindsight, and you can depends which you look at it from different angles, but that slight sense that, you know, we play a certain way, and if it doesn't come off, then there's always another game tomorrow. And the problem is, at some point, there isn't another game tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't see all of the Sri Lanka game, but you know, and I know Sri Lanka bowled well, likewise Australia bowled well, but there are reasons why teams perform well, why your opponents perform well at times, possibly because you allow them to.
Mm-hmm.
And England don't appear to have been as ruthless as you certainly would want them to be, or as we probably thought they could be. So, you know, the absence of Jason Roy is a factor, but certainly against Sri Lanka it shouldn't have been a decisive factor.
Mm-hmm.
I think possibly that, you know, just as teams talk about, I mean, everyone talks about momentum or whatever word you want to use, and it's all a bit nebulous, really. But if it exists at all, then it has to work both ways.
Yeah.
You can't you know, a team will willingly say, you know, we're on a great roll and we're carrying it into next week, blah, blah, blah. But they will very rarely say we're on a bad roll and we can't get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Morgan has sort of alluded to that because he said the confidence has taken a hit. But I think, and possibly, again, there's perhaps a naivety there, although, again, there really shouldn't be, but mm-hmm. a naivety to think that, yeah, so they mess up against Sri Lanka, but hey, it doesn't matter because, you know, that's gone and we move on to the next one.
Yeah.
I think that is a real problem. I think you can't lose a game like that Sri Lanka game and then expect to just shake it off at Lord's against Australia. And they bowled poorly. They bowled with a sort of diffidence
mm-hmm.
that, you know, belied their abilities. You know, they won the toss and put Australia in helpful conditions and then wasted the opportunity.
And yet Morgan, he was insistent that they bowled well up front and that they were unlucky. He gave a very punchy and pointed post-match press conference last night. You've interviewed him many times. You've met him a number of times. How do you think he is managing these expectations? What's your impression of his overall demeanour in recent days?
I wasn't at the press conference, but I've read about it, and punchy was probably the word. I mean, I guess, how else are you going to respond to a tweet from Kevin Peterson saying you look scared, other than to, he probably dealt with that quite well, really, mm-hmm. to be a bit sarcastic, but I think he's a very impressive individual.
Do you think, John, that we, in the media, and those attached to the media, put undue pressure on these players with a lot of talk about cut-through, about legacy, about the future of the game? And there's no secret that in the ECB's corridors, they are obsessed with success at this World Cup because they believe this will open doors to a whole new generation of fans. Players are aware of that because they've been asked about it every day for the last 6 months. Do you think that we've been unwittingly complicit in piling more pressure on their shoulders than they've been able to deal with up to now?
Yes and no. I mean, it's all part. I mean, that's what pressure is, really, isn't it? I mean, if no one cared about these games, then you know, they wouldn't. They'd be a completely different animal, wouldn't they? I mean, you know, playing a county championship match in front of, you know, 500 people is a wholly different thing to playing a game in front of 30,000 people.
Yeah.
But the words you use imply that there's something wrong with what's happening, which I don't think is the case at all. I think you make the very valid point that the ECB, you know, it's all the pressure comes internally and obviously it's amplified externally. I mean, that's the way it is. And frankly, mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen it with England football teams as well in other different circumstances, but and people talking about pressure. I mean, I think you could go to any, this doesn't apply to cricket necessarily, except in India or Pakistan, actually, probably. You go to any, you know, many countries with a national football team, and you'd see pressure beyond, completely off the scale, completely disproportionate attitudes to success and failure. So I think, you know, even allowing for the fact that we're there was an expectation that England were at least, you know, well, they're number one in the world, so mm-hmm. they're favourites, right? I mean, I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's anything that has been said or written or done that is somehow disproportionate. I think, frankly, you'd probably say the opposite, because actually, if we're talking about cut through and so on and so forth, then this should be the talk of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's not.
Yeah, and it was very notable yesterday that a number of Australians mentioned the 5-time world champions. It was mentioned in the commentary box, it was mentioned in pre-match and post-match interviews, and from the players as well. The past is very much alive, it feels, in this tournament. England have a 44-year itch to scratch. And, you know, in other cases, such as Australia's, they are parading their past tournament wins and so on and so on. And it's hard to shake this sense that all of this pressure, all of this expectation is loading up on England, and that the past is increasingly hard to shake. But then maybe this is just journalism talk, I don't know. I want to ask you, John, are we unduly fatalistic considering they have 2 games to go? Or are we looking at these 2 games, India on Sunday, at Edgbaston, which turns and has turned today for the New Zealand-Pakistan game, and then, of course, New Zealand on Wednesday next week at Durham, where you imagine it will swing itself round corners. They are going to be 2 tough games, but can England turn them over? Can they get what they need, do you think, still?
They surely can, because they don't become a bad team. And I think that there's a temptation to think of them as flat-track bullies, and I think that doesn't stand up to scrutiny. They've won plenty of series away from home. They have won tight games, big games. They've adapted to ways of winning, but it looks unlikely at this stage, and you'd feel like... But I think it's kind of gloriously impossible to tell. I mean, this England team has confounded us in many ways, mostly in good ways, and obviously at the moment in slightly in unimpressive ways. I won't be backing them to do it, but they're all about the batting, aren't they? And if the batting can come off, they've obviously, their strategy for a long time was win the toss and chase, and that's as we've just been discussing has come a cropper horribly.
Indeed.
And actually, it's been a hard tournament for captains when they do win the toss, because mm-hmm. conditions have been, it's been sort of seasonably wet at times. The pitches have been hard to read, and so it's been tough. India do look really strong, for sure. We thought they were strong, and they are. It'd be nice if Roy was fit, which sounds like he probably won't be fully fit, but he might yet play. I don't know. I think they clearly need some big scores from a few people. I mean, New Zealand are a funny one. Obviously, we're speaking as they're in the midst of an interesting game against Pakistan. They've unbeaten thus far, but they've won a series of close games,
mm-hmm.
And that's impressive on one level, but quite unimpressive on another level. So. I could see England beating New Zealand,
and yet it might be a dead rubber. You never know.
Okay,
look, I have plenty more questions to ask you, John, but no doubt we can unpick this later down the line. We're maybe getting slightly ahead of ourselves here, but the pessimism today is hard to shake, I find. All right, John, thanks ever so much, and we'll speak to you later on in the tournament.
No problem at all.
Okay, Andrew, that was John Stern's thoughts. Fatalism is kicking in, as to be expected with any English sporting psyche. Offer us some succour here. Offer us some perspective on England's tribulations.
The English side, I mean, they've got... one thing I worry about with that side is that are they too one-dimensional in that they just want to continue that tempo, and Owen Morgan has spoken about it a number of times, the build-up to the World Cup, and we've seen what they've been able to achieve, particularly in bilateral series over the last couple of years and probably beyond, even since the 2015 World Cup. But in a tournament situation, I just wonder with the variables at play and adapting to surfaces, etc., and with the wet June that England seems to have had,
mm-hmm.
that they're going to be able to do that enough, particularly at the business end. That would be my biggest concern.
It may all come down to that game next Wednesday at Chesley Street, your boys against ours. All will be revealed. Andrew Alderson, thank you ever so much for your time, as ever.
Well.
Hopefully we'll pick up with you later on in the tournament as well. Go well, sir, and we'll speak to you soon. This has been the Wisden Cricket Daily Podcast in partnership with Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of memories since 1979. We'll be back tomorrow when Zafran Ansari will be joining myself and Yaz Rana to unpick the latest shenanigans in this suddenly rather gripping tournament, I would say. Don't forget to subscribe, of course, via the podcast app and Spotify and all the rest of it. Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll be back tomorrow. Hope you enjoyed Baba Azam Day.
Podcast Network.